So our presentation title is Street Vendors' Contribution to the Diets of Low-Income Latino Children.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Banerjee, for the nice introduction. And like you said, my topic is Street Vendors' Contribution to the Diets of Low-Income Latino Children. And I just want to acknowledge the co-presenter, Dr. Graves, who's also here in the audience. And I have no relationships to disclose. So my introduction is that the snacks purchased from street vendors and consumed by elementary school children may be contributing to calorie-dense, nutrient-poor diets. I'm from Los Angeles, and we have a lot of street vendors. We have the taco trucks, the mobile, other kinds of food trucks, but we also have these very small wheeled food vendors that actually plant themselves outside of schools, and as the children are exiting, we've been concerned about what they're selling, and so we wanted to look at that. So we're quantifying the number of street vendors surrounding schools in one particular neighborhood in East Los Angeles. It's the Boyle Heights area, and it's predominantly Latino, about 97% Latino, and is characterized as being very low income. We measured the snacks purchased. We wanted to quantify snacking habits and behaviors, and then we actually collected BMI information from the children. So prior research on street vendors there's very little of it. There is some research about the New York green carts, but actually about street vendors that are selling to children, there's only two that I was able to find, and this is from Dr. Tester up in Oakland, and she has done some excellent research, and she strongly believes that we should consider street vendors as part of the after-school environment. We can't forget them and only focus on corner markets and other places, supermarkets or fast food joints where children may be buying food. We need to look at street vendors. She did an interesting study where she had introduced cut fruit and vegetables to outside of one of the schools, and each day more children progressively purchased the cut fruits and vegetables, and they purchased fewer of the nutrient-dense, you know, less healthy snacks. So each day it got better. So that's promising. However, no one's actually quantified what they're selling, and so that's what I was attempting to do. So our methodology was that for a couple months, May to June of last year, we focused in on this one zip code that I've already described, and we caught parents or guardians that were exiting the school with their children or waiting for their children as they exited, and we interviewed them. We administered a 24-question survey, took somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes to do, and the survey was done about half of the time in English and half the time in Spanish, so I had bilingual students working with me. It is a convenient sample, and we can talk about some of the limitations of that. The questions that we asked them to show us the snack they just purchased. We asked them how much it cost. We also asked them how frequently they bought snacks from street vendors and why in particular they wanted to buy snacks for the kids. We asked the height and weight of the child and then general demographics about the adults. So what we found, we chose schools where we already knew there were street vendors. So before we did the survey, we drove around this neighborhood and measured at every elementary school in the neighborhood who had street vendors, because we weren't going to go out and send our surveyors out if there were no street vendors. So we found that 17 of the schools did have street vendors around them, and there were 64. So that's an average of about 4 street vendors per school. At one of the schools, the ratio was 1 street vendor for every 33 pupils, which is really high. And on the low end, we had 1 for every 464 students, and then the average was about 1 for every 133 students. So there are a lot of street vendors in this one particular area. Now, we did ask the BMI from the adult, and again, it's self-collected data, so you don't always get the perfect data, but for the ones that did know the weight and the height, we were able to compute the BMI. And where they didn't know the height, which was more common, we actually had a tape measure and we measured the child. So not perfect, but it was the best we could do on the street corner. And what we found is that 13 12% were overweight and 26 or almost 27%, were obese, which is about 42% either overweight or obese. In this particular area of Boyle Heights, when the youth reach adolescence, they've computed their the BMI to be overweight or obese about in about 50% of the kids. So it's pretty close to what the stats are for in a different study. Okay, so this is an overwhelming graph of all of our results, but I'm going to break it down for you quickly. The main snacks that the students purchased were the raspados, or the shaved ice, which are these delicious concoctions where a vendor will come out and shave the ice, or have the ice already shaved and put into a cup, and they will pour a rich sweet syrup over it, or they'll make their own homemade recipes and pour it over. So we found 35% of the kids purchased raspados. Ice cream that was prepackaged is about 20%. Chips were very popular, another 20% almost. And then fried goods, where they actually added things like melted cheese to the Cheetos. So those were very common. In particular, if you add it all up, it's about 85% of the snacks were not healthy. Fruit was purchased 5.6% of the time. Okay, so then you might have the question, well, did you only survey the kids that were buying the raspados? And I went out typically with 5 to 7 students, and I said, collect at least one from every type of vendor that you find. So if there was only one fruit vendor, we got at least one, but there were a lot more raspado and ice cream trucks out there. So it's not a perfect sample, but it's you know, the best we could do. So why do parents buy the particular snacks for their kids? It's what they asked for. 40% of the parents said, that's what my child wanted. They want those raspados. And then they used it as a treat for behaving well. So those are interesting reasons where it's almost the parent-directed nutrition, where the parents are telling, the children are telling the parents what they want. A large percentage, about 25%, said they wanted those nice cold treats because it was, 90 degrees in LA, which is really common. So what did they spend? On the low end, a quarter, and that was for little pieces of candy, up to $3.50. And that was for some of the prepared snacks and actually for the fruits. The fruits were a lot more expensive. The average that was spent on a snack was about a dollar, and the healthier items cost at least 50% more than the less healthy alternatives. The average calories per item, about 370 calories per item. Now keep in mind, some of the children, their parents purchased 2, 3, or 4 items for them, which I didn't show that. There was no statistically significant relationship between gender and BMI, and we didn't find any between gender and the calories purchased. So we were so intrigued with raspados being so popular that we had our students go back out again and collect 5 samples of the raspados, and we weighed and measured the ice before and after the addition of the syrup. And in 4 cases, it was a pre-made syrup, and then the 5th one, it was a homemade syrup, and we got the recipe for it, analyzed the recipe, and then we quantified it, and we found that the samples ranged from the low end of 270 calories to up to 728 calories. This is a snack. But the average was around 450 calories. When they had a label, it was actually pretty easy to see the teaspoons of sugar. So it went anywhere from 16 teaspoons of added sugar to up to 40, and sometimes beyond, of added sugar in just in their one snack. We were unable to collect the rest of the homemade recipes just because there were so many, but the majority were the raspados, and we felt like that was worth our time to try to quantify it. So what are we doing now? I have a grad student working with a Latino high school, and they actually are working on developing a healthier raspado recipe because it's a culturally accepted snack. People love it. On a hot day, it tastes fantastic. But is there a way that we can make it healthier? And we think that there is. And so that's what we're developing the recipe right now. We also find that it might be a good idea to interview our street vendors and find out if they think they have a contribution to the health of the kids, and maybe they could come up with some solutions as well. Parents and guardians are completely unaware of the the density, the nutrient density, not the nutrient, caloric density of snacks. I know that from talking to parents, and they don't know that Raspados are not healthy. They don't think they're healthy, but they don't think they're as unhealthy as they are. And then I really would like to partner with our street vendors to improve the options being offered. Right now, there's a very large movement in LA to legalize street vending, especially these very small mom-and-pop street vendors, because it gives people a job, and that's really important. But on the other side, these are street vendors that are working in communities where half of the children are overweight or obese, and I think we can do both. We can accomplish both goals, and so there's lots of creative ways that we need to do that. So there were a number of students that helped with collecting the data, and I was given a little bit of research funding to do the research. I will just point out, though, that I had a funder who is a very large nonprofit in California, and they initially gave me funding, and then they realized that, on the other hand, they were also supporting street vendors, and they did not ask to be acknowledged for my data, because they really don't want to know what the street vendors are selling, which I think is a very interesting thing. So that's the conclusion, and if you have any questions, I think I have some time.
We have time, yeah. So we have time for a few questions. Please come over to the microphone if you would. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Arianna from the University of Georgia, and I have a question about the registration process. Do street vendors have to register their vending machine or street car to sell their food in the area, and is the registration process strict? If it's not, do you think the local government could potentially become involved in this movement for healthier street food and impose stricter regulations on the vendors?
Yeah, every street vendor is supposed to be licensed and registered, and I heard it's expensive, $400 to $1,000. They have to have a clean cart and go in, and the latest I heard there were 15,000 registered street vendors in LA County, and about 15,000 more that are unregistered and unlicensed. And there are 19 people who double check on them. So you can imagine. And so it's not only an issue of what they're selling, it's also a food safety issue. They have very strict rules about what they are and are not allowed to be selling. And for the majority around the schools are not licensed and they're not checked and they don't have the sticker. So great question.
Thank you.
Oh, so really interesting. So I've done similar work in the Bronx and found very similar findings. I mean, a little bit different given some of the climatic differences between the regions. But and actually, there are 2/3 of the vendors are unregistered, unlicensed, and vending, you know, illegally by the letter of the law. But I was interested in your work, and I think I missed this, how you were able to survey the children. I mean, what the consent process was. I mean, it sounds like parents were involved, but I imagine some kids don't have parents there and are purchasing on their own. And did you only sample the ones that did have parents there, and
right,
what the permission process was in the IRB, you know, regarding the protection of children around this, you know, measuring them and getting information and looking in their bags and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we didn't look in any of their bags, but we only talked to parents. So we didn't ask any children that were there alone. And that's why we surveyed elementary school children, because they were always picked up by a parent. And this is also, around these schools, a lot of parents walk home. So sometimes we would walk with the family home in order to do the survey, because they didn't want to waste time doing the survey. So we actually accompanied them a couple blocks. So it wasn't that hard in communities where parents picked their children up after school. It might have been harder to do it. But yeah, it was an anonymous survey, so we didn't even have to have formal consent signed. But we only talked to the parents. And our IRB was totally fine with that. Yeah, that's a great question, though.
Any other questions?
Hi, really interesting talk. I'm curious to know, how you said like 5 or 10% of the vendors sold fruit and vegetable or fruit, and did those vendors only sell fruit? Did they sell fruit in conjunction with other things? Like, was there anything different about those people and the people who bought those products in your eyes?
Yeah, we didn't have a large enough sample size to actually be able to compare BMIs to those who purchase fruit, which is unfortunate. I'm not saying that only 5% purchase fruit, that only 5% that we surveyed were of fruit. But that's probably about right. And it was the cut of fruit that's delicious, but it's also super expensive. And typically that was all they sold. Sometimes they sold, you know, those pinwheels that are fried along the side of the cart, but it was typically the fruit, which is delicious. And when it's cut up, the kids would buy it. Mangoes were the other thing, you know, the mangoes on the stick, and then they peel them. But again, those were about $1.50 or $2 and 70 calories, and the parents probably thought it was better to buy a snack that would actually hold their kids till they got home.
Hi. Thank you for the information. I'm just wondering, what sort of ingredients would you put in a ricotta to make it more flavorful for the kids and healthier? Like a fruit type of flavor?
Well, we're having a little trouble with our IRB because in order to get recipes through, it's real complicated. So we're going to stick with juices that we could purchase and pour on. So mixtures of, you know, juices that the students might find flavorful and enjoyable, and it'll have, you know, a quarter less sugar probably. And I've tried a couple of the samples out on my own children, and they like them. So I think it's doable, but it'll be a shift for people that are used to super syrup on a raspado versus fruit juice.
Because the fruit juice also has sugar in it, but that's what makes it taste good.
A lot less, yeah. So, great question.
Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Hillstrom.
Yeah, thank you.